am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Hello, everybody, on this wonderful Monday, June 10th of 2013. My name is Jan Revelle, and this is Purpose Talk Radio. Radio with a purpose, a soul purpose, and it's wonderful to have you join us today. I want to let you know about our theme song, which is called I Am Who I Am, and it's by the group True Trinity. True Trinity is made up of Cindy Freeman, who is also our wonderful facilitator, and Jillian Clark and Rachel Martinez. You can find them at TrueTrinity.com. That's TrueTrinity.com, where you can listen to the song, you can purchase the song, you can connect with them. I want to remind you all that you can join us on Facebook in our Purpose Talk Radio Conversations group. So go to Facebook and look for the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations group and then request to join, and Cindy will make sure that she gets you into the group. And speaking of Cindy, today is Cindy's birthday. So I want to wish a very joyful birthday, happy birthday to Cindy Freeman. Happy birthday, Cindy, and thank you for being here with us. Today we have two guests on the show. It's very exciting. This is the first in a 13-week series on feminine spiritual trailblazers. These are contemporary women spiritual leaders. And our guests today are Deborah Annapol and Karen Schrappa. I'm really excited to be able to talk with them, and I'll introduce them in just a little while. We have to take care of housekeeping, obviously, first of all, and all that housekeeping stuff is, I think I might have done it. In any case, go to Purpose Talk Radio Conversations and join the group. Go to True Trinity and check them out, that musical group. And I'm Jan Revelle. If you need to contact me, you can contact me at jan@purposetalkradio.com. There was something I was thinking of, and it just slipped my mind. Oh, there it is in front of me. You can call in if you would like to speak to either one of our guests or with me. The number is 347-205-9074. I'll repeat it, 347-205-9074. Now, just so you know, I've drawn three extra oracle cards that we can, if you want a reading following the interviews, you're welcome to call in that number, and we can do that. Again, I have three cards. You can choose from those, or you can choose a card from the deck. The card for the show today is one that we've had before. It's been a while, but we've had it. It's called The Child. And The Child, this is a wonderful and so appropriate for today's program. This card shows a very young child, an infant, well, a child who is walking. So not very old, but a child who is walking, and there are six women. They don't look like, they don't have wings, so they're not our typical angels, but these are six women who are all standing over this child, holding their hands toward the child in blessing. And today we're dealing with the first, like I said, the first in a series of 13 of Feminine Spiritual Trailblazers, and this is a book. The book will be coming out hopefully in August, August, September. So you're in on the very beginning of this, and this is The Child, and there are, well, it looks like there's six women, so we have 26 women in this first version, in this first book, so we'll see what happens with this and who these immediate six women are, but obviously there's going to be six women who are really influential, not only in this show, but in the book. So let's move on here. Today, again, we're going to talk with Deborah and Karen. And I'll remind you again, if you want to call in the number 347-205-9074. And following the interviews, we'll also have some oracle cards available if you would like to Right, if you'd like to have a reading. So I'm going to bring Karen and Deborah into the show now, and then we're going to be able to talk to them. Good morning, Karen. Good morning, Deborah. You're probably going to have to talk one at a time so we don't all over-talk each other. So let's say good morning to Karen, first of all. Good morning, Karen. Well, it's not morning,
is it? Hi, Jan. I was going to say where I am. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So...
Well, it's noon here, but it must still feel like morning. So good afternoon, Karen.
Good afternoon, Jan. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm excited about this show. And good afternoon, Deborah. How are you?
I'm great. I just came back from my yoga class, and I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Awesome. Awesome. This is going to be really exciting. I can't tell you how excited I am about the show and the book. So we all spoke about a year ago when I interviewed each of you for this book, and we talked about what you were doing. And the focus of the book is a little different than the focus of the show. The focus of the book is for these women, this is for the listeners, for these women who all have 20-plus, and usually quite a bit more than that, years of experience in the spiritual, working in the spiritual realm. And they are here in the book and today to share with us some of their knowledge. I mean, it's pretty condensed when you have a 1 hour or 2 hour show for 40 plus years of experience combined. But anyway, in the book is geared towards people who are walking their spiritual path, and they are training people coming up behind them. And these women are all like the college professors who are sharing their knowledge on to their students who are sharing their knowledge on beyond that. So it's really, really exciting to have you both here. I can't say who would like to go first, talk a little bit about what you're doing and where you came back from. Neither one of you. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, well, this is Deborah, and I guess I will say that people are always really surprised when I tell them that the thing that got me going on the path that I'm on was watching the Vietnam War on the news, on television, as a teenager. And I really found these images so horrifying and not okay that I said to myself that this has to stop. And so I embarked on a search to see how I might be able to contribute to ending war. And I started out looking for political solutions, and I quickly realized that those were not effective. And somewhere along the way, realized that really I was for peace, not against war. And I also explored feminism, but again saw that that was more againstness than being for something. But I said, what is feminism really for? And I saw that it was recognizing the Divine Mother. And at that time, most people still had the idea that God was a man. And it felt very important to recognize that, the divine includes the feminine. The divine maybe is androgynous. It certainly doesn't exclude the feminine. And, in fact, I discovered that in the past, people were at least as interested in the Great Mother as in sky god above. And so that became an exploration for me. And along that route, I realized that our spirituality has not only excluded the feminine face of God, but our bodies, and particularly our sexuality. And so a lot of my work since that time has been directed toward integrating sex and spirit.
That is really interesting, Deborah. I just wanted to make a comment that your voice is fading in and out a little bit. I'm not sure if it's the phone connection or what, but I just wanted to make you aware of that. But I found your comments.
Yeah, you were fading out on me too, and I wondered about that. And I don't think it's my phone connection, although you never know.
Well, it could very well be my Skype connection. We'll find out. I wanted to mention about that you talked about Vietnam. I remember I was in Europe during the Vietnam War, and I say I was against war. It's just that I didn't want to have anything to do with it. So I basically did my best to ignore it as much as I could. And then years later, I was doing medical transcription for the VA and had to do some compensation and pension reports for soldiers who had been in the Vietnam War and 30 years later were dealing with the terrible ghosts. There was one man who had been involved in the Mae Lai massacre, and he had done so without remorse, killing women and children and basically reveling in what he was doing. And yet 30 years later, he was unable to live. He just couldn't deal with all the ghosts.
Right, post-traumatic stress syndrome. People weren't really very aware of that before Vietnam, and I think that brought it into awareness, into consciousness. And part of my path was getting a doctorate in clinical psychology, so post-traumatic stress syndrome was a very big thing when I was in school in the 80s because of all the vets that came back from Vietnam. And, of course, that wasn't the first war. They had come back with post-traumatic stress, but I think it really got into public awareness at that time.
Yeah, you're right. So how did that lead you to the exploration of sexuality and where you are today with the work you're doing today?
Well, as I said, once I started looking into how is it that our notion of the divine is masculine, I realized that most of our Western religions have separated sexuality and spirituality, have separated actually the body, the earth, anything that is material from an understanding of it being spiritual. Now, this was extremely different in all of the indigenous cultures, which saw everything was imbued with spirit, even things we don't really think of as being alive, like rocks or oceans. Everything is imbued with spirit. And so this separation of the material from the spiritual, and also the war between the sexes, because the concept was that women were part of the material and men somehow, even though they had bodies, were part of the spiritual, and so therefore women were subordinate to men. And this is created a war between the sexes where both men and women have struggled to get their needs met, but also regarding each other as the enemy and being socialized in a way so that it's very difficult for men and women to understand each other and to love and respect each other. And so what this has created is domestic situations which are anything but peaceful. So I came to believe, well, not just believe, but understand that peace begins at home. Peace begins with conception. Peace begins with the relationship between mother and father, who as infants, as small children, they are the god and the goddess. They are the masculine and the feminine role models for us. Those are our parents. And so when they're at war with each other, a warlike society evolves. And so it seemed like the thing to do was go back to the family and see how there could be peace between men and women, between mother and father, and that led me directly into dealing with sexuality and relationships.
Well, that sounds like a pretty logical but also intense journey.
Yeah, both as a personal journey and as a professional journey. And I was had been exploring different ways of how could we change the conditioning that we have about what it is to be a man and what it is to be a woman, and how could we change the conditioning that we have about sexuality and spirituality. And I'd made a lot of wonderful discoveries when I encountered a man named Jack Painter, who had created a whole body of work called Pelvic Heart Integration, which I quickly realized had put together a lot of the different pieces I was already working with, but in a synergistic package. And so that's where I'm really focusing now on not so much practicing this work, although I do some of that, but training other people. And mm-hmm. it's a Reichian-based, multidimensional work, and it's the best thing that I have found for bringing together sex and spirit. And interestingly enough, people have all kinds of ideas about what it would mean to integrate sex and spirit. In pelvic heart integration, it kind of goes back to the understanding of indigenous people, that our ancestors, mother, father, but, you know, even way back in our lineage, either can be our allies and our support, or they can kind of be, they can burden us with all of their traumas. And we were talking a minute ago about the traumas that people experience in war. And I think more and more we're understanding that, as the cellist Glendinning said, you know, Western civilization is a history of war and trauma and famine and people being torn off the land. And so in this work, you know, we explore the family lineage, and for most people, you go back one or two generations, and you've got war, and you've got famine, and you've got dislocation.
Right.
So, you know, we work to access the spiritual longings and essence of the ancestors, and to bring forward their life force and their love, and bring that into our relationships, rather than the trauma and the struggle and the abuse that they may have suffered at the hands of the other gender and the same gender.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done some work with the root or the base chakra that gets pretty deep. And I'm wondering if your pelvic heart integration does anything with that, or what?
Yes. Including the base chakra, which, you know, if you've worked with it, you know this is where our sense of grounding into the earth and also our sense of security or fear originates.
Right, right. It brings up a lot of the past life stuff as well, so I don't know if you get into that part of it, but...
Well,
okay.
You never know what will come up.
Yeah, really, really. Well, I'm going to move over to Karen for a little bit. And Karen, let's have you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more. You just got back from a trip to Peru, right?
Mm-hmm. I hope you can hear me okay, because, you know, I'm sort of also getting a little bit of a breaking up. I'm on a landline. But I feel really excited, and certainly know that there are no accidents, you know, in terms of even our coming together here to speak on this show, and so many things that Deborah was speaking of really speak to my own personal journey, and many of the messages that are coming from Peru right now. And really, I've been on the journey there for the past 4 years, but the messages that we receive from the medicine people that we work with and from the APU sessions where we really have the privilege to be in dialogue with spirit speaks to this time in our evolution around not only the awakening of a divine feminine, but a balancing of these energies of the masculine and feminine. So I've just been, you know, fascinated by what Deborah was speaking on, because it just resonates so much, like I said, with you know, my experience as well. And just as a little bit of a background for listeners, I had stepped onto a healing path for myself, really in a more traditional way. I started school for physical therapy, and I feel like for me that was my own body really seeking healing. And I had started smoking at 11 years old, so by the time I got to physical therapy school in my mid-20s, I felt like, how could I be this model of health for people if I was smoking? And I had really tried for a number of years to stop, but that was sort of the impetus that that kind of pushed me to give up smoking. And really, what I've loved about the field of physical therapy over the years is that, you know, I've been able to work in, you know, relatively traditional settings in terms of the Western model of medicine, but I've really always been interested in more alternative methods. So, and it was really my own personal journey over the past few decades that ends up integrating into, you know, my own work. So I would say for me, you know, nearly anybody that I've ever seen that comes to see me, you know, professionally is seeing me because they're in pain. And it's very clear that, you know, pain is a wake-up call. It's, you know, it's just the body's way of looking for some kind of attention, you know, something that we're neglecting, something that we're suppressing. So I feel like my work has been about how to bring that kind of awareness to someone, and most people, especially if they're coming to me through physical therapy, they're really seeing everything in terms of the body. So it's like, how can we see ourselves in this larger context, that we are more than just our physicality? We certainly, you know, how are our thoughts contributing to what's happening in our body, our emotions? And really, I feel like for me, the last 10 years has been working more at the level of the soul. And it started by stepping into trance dancing as kind of a more shamanic kind of path. And that's led me to the journeys to Peru over the past 4 years. And it's a woman's journey that has been called by spirit. So, again, I just feel like it's just inherent to the times that we're in, that we're speaking about sexuality. And what's fascinating is I guess it was about 2 weeks or so ago that I returned from Peru. And we do spend a day at Machu Picchu in ceremony. We get there really early, before sunrise. And then we spend most of the day sitting in and around the plaza, designated areas, in meditation. And one of the messages that was really coming through for me this year in particular was about releasing the shame that we have held the feminine in, and really beginning to embrace the erotic nature of ourselves, because this is really the source of our creation. And so that's why I was really also, like I said, fascinated and just am always in awe of spirit, how we've been brought together in this conversation today.
Well, I purposely chose, and will continue, but I purposely chose two of you who were supposedly, who appeared to be in very different directions mm-hmm. in what you are doing, because I wanted to see exactly what you've just said, how spirit integrates all of this yes. that we're doing, mm-hmm. because it really does. The other thing that you mentioned is psychotherapy and people thinking that what they have is all what that they have is in the body, the pain that they have is in the body, and you've been working with soul on that. It reminded me of my body linguistics course, which is actually was given to me by spirit, that is how our soul has imprinted actual physical messages into our bodies that not only tell us how we do things, but and the pain that you're feeling is where is it, and that can also tell us why that pain is there. Why are we holding back? Why aren't we reaching out or taking the steps that we need to take in order to accomplish our purposes, and also to learn the lessons that we chose to learn? I mean, you can yeah. look at somebody's body, even their face, and you can be able to tell them, these are some of the lessons that you chose to learn in this lifetime, and this is how you chose to learn them. Mm-hmm. Just phenomenal. I mean, it's not even, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
I'm stunned when I teach this class and how amazing it is. But it sounds like your work is going in that direction as well. So I applaud you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, I feel like there are these, you know, kind of personal wounds that we come mm-hmm. in with. But, you know, I also feel like we are living in this huge time in our evolution as far as the collective wounding of the feminine. And, you know, just to illustrate that even a bit for myself, like I, as a child, as a young girl, I was really very bright, and that came very easily to me in school, you know, with different testings and all those things that they, you know, your reading capacity and all. And then for some reason, when I was in sixth grade, turning around 12 years old or so, I remember deliberately marking answers wrong on a test. It was like
right.
no one told me that, but I knew I didn't want to be known as smart because somehow, you know, that would mean a boy wouldn't really like me. And I feel like that dimming, that diminishing of my own light certainly played out in relationship. But I feel like that's part of the evolution, you know, we are like that microcosm that's part of the, you know, the mm-hmm. whole. And mm-hmm. So I feel like this is also what's awakening, you know, not just in each of us as individuals, but it does take a kind of an energetic momentum for those kinds of conditionings and cultural mm-hmm. imprints that have been put on us to really shift. And I feel it does come from the individual work that we each do, you know, and that's actually what ripples out and starts, as Deborah was saying, you know, affecting our families and then affecting
right.
our communities and the worlds in which we live. So it's true. I feel like if we do want to impact change, we do have to begin to look at ourselves and what is it that we're doing, as Deborah was saying earlier, whether are we for peace or what is it that we're standing for and what is it that, because that's what we're also putting out and contributing into the world.
I remember doing exactly that same thing in the fourth grade.
Yeah.
I moved to a new school, and there was a math test that day, and I was the only one who got 100 on the test.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to fit in so desperately yeah. with other people that I immediately called it dumbing down.
Yeah.
And it does. It impacts the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And it also is very much of a male-female thing that women aren't supposed mm-hmm. to be that smart. Deborah, let's
yeah.
have you wait mm-hmm. on.
Did I miss that?
Oh, Deborah, let's bring you in on this
yeah.
part of the conversation.
Okay, yeah, you cut out on that last bit,
oh.
so I was feeling a little confused there. Can you repeat the last 30 seconds?
Hold on, I've got...
About the dumbing down?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
I've got music going in the background, so can one of you kind of repeat that so I can find out where this music is and get rid of it? It was an ad on Skype. Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Okay, I'm sorry. The dumbing down was Karen said that she remembered at 12 years old answering questions incorrectly, and I remember in the fourth grade that I also chose to purposely dumb down so that I could fit in and so that boys would like me.
Yeah, I can also remember a lot of issues. Again, this socialization of women as being, you know, kind of the ideal is the dumb blonde. Mm-hmm. And I never bought into it. Mm-hmm. But I was certainly aware of it, and my reaction to that was to create my own little subculture in the school. So we kind of started campaigning very early on around that age to change the culture and that we were living in, which at that point was, public school. And there was definitely an association, not only with, only boys are supposed to be intelligent, but again, only boys are supposed to be sexual.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, we were very aware of that double standard. And that if, as a girl in junior high or high school, you revealed yourself to be a sexual being, there was tremendous social pressure, not only about intelligence, but also about bodies and sexuality. So I think, my response to both of those was to go into rebellion and to say, I don't care what people think. I'm intelligent and I'm sexual. And in a way, that was, I think, a good survival strategy. But what it did was to create an attitude of rebellion in me, which, much later in life when I went deeper into spiritual work, I began to see the cost of that rebellion. And it's, people have different ideas about what spirituality is. Mm-hmm. But for me, really the core of it is oneness. And it's very difficult to have a sense of oneness when you're in rebellion because you have to be against something. That's
right. So how did you come from being against something to being for something?
Well, I would say it was a long process. And the process of, first of all, finding some things that I could be for. Like I could be for peace. I could be for love. I could be for sexuality. And my first spiritual immersion was in the Gurdjieff work, which kind of directs our attention inward rather than outward, and seeing that a lot of what maybe we perceive as for and against in the world out there is also happening inside, and that there are different subpersonalities that are for or against things. And so I think that started me with the idea of finding some kind of reconciliation. And from there, I got involved with Sufi Order of the West, which is also very much about oneness. The founder of Sufi Order of the West came from India, and of course, in India and much of Asia, the conflict between the Hindus and the Muslims is one that often results in bloodshed. And so
the order that he came from, his teacher, was at one time an advisor to the Muslim emperor. The Muslims had taken over that part of India. And he somehow influenced the emperor, who, as a Muslim, could have multiple wives, to have one Muslim, one Hindu, and one Christian wife. And I visited the site, which near the famous Taj Mahal, but actually a much more interesting site to me, where you could see he had built separate palaces for each of these wives in the style of her own culture, and they're all peacefully coexisting in this city that was built. So though that, I didn't find out about that till much later, but the very powerful intention in the Sufi order to honor and respect all of the world religions, I think showed me that even where different belief systems or people appear to be in conflict, there's always common ground. There's always the possibility of integration and reconciliation. But I'd say for most of my life, the process of looking in the outside world and then looking inside, both with psychological and spiritual tools, to see how, you know, the conflicts on the outside and the divisions on the outside are really not anything that any of us as individuals have any control over. And this can be can create a feeling of helplessness, but I think a more productive response to realizing, you know, I have no control over what the government does or what this country does or that country does. But what I am able to do is to look inside and see how those conflicts arise within me and end the war inside. Find a way to listen to and honor what might appear to be opposing needs or viewpoints, and find a way to listen to all of those sides. And then very consciously and intentionally finding a way to create support and cooperation inside. So then, you know, the againstness that's being mirrored in the outer world somehow miraculously turns to support and cooperation when I've created that inside. But that's a long process, both of psychotherapy and spiritual work. I don't think there's any shortcuts, although I don't know that there aren't, but I haven't found any.
Well, you know, I've talked quite often about encouraging and turning our ego into an ally. Because so often we've talked about slaying of the ego or killing the ego in order to be really spiritual people. And nobody likes to be killed. So they're going to fight against it, which the ego does quite dramatically. But if we can turn our ego into an ally, then we have one of the strongest allies in existence. And I use my ego when I say, you know, I want your help to make sure that I stay on this spiritual path that I have chosen and that I'm focusing on it, that I am truly living in the way that I have said I want to live. So if I go off track here, I'm asking you, my ego, my ally, to do a little kick butt and get me back on track. And it, we seem to have a really good relationship. But you're right in that it mirrors, or my outer life, that we create our own universe, as they say, and my universe is reflecting, I can see it directly reflecting what's going on inside of me. So that was a question I wanted to ask both of you. was, and you really somewhat just answered it, Deborah, but how can we turn this war between men and women, the war between the quote-unquote primitive cultures and quote-unquote civilized cultures, how can we turn all of these, the East versus the West and all these things, into something that we are working for rather than fighting against? Karen, how about if you jump in here?
Yeah. Well, that's a really big question. And and I feel, you know, from my perspective, and I think reiterating some of what's been said, is the work is really our own personal journey. I feel like, again, we are in a time where starting to come into right relationship, beginning with the elements, you know, so because the elements that are a part of our world, you know, the waters, fire, air, and earth, are really the elements that exist within us as well. And I know for myself, having some daily practice is very, very helpful, because I feel for myself that for me is what accelerated my own evolution. And I feel like dedicating, number one, yourself to your practice, your devotion, whatever form that might take, is really essential to begin to create an alignment of who you are and your values and where they are in the world. So I don't know, for instance, if like one of the things, for instance, that really shifted my perspective, and this was a teaching that I had heard, you know, I don't quite remember when, but this practice of gratitude, and I think as sort of as simple and as cliche as that may sound, it is a principle that has really helped me shift even those things within myself that feel so difficult or so challenging. Can I even learn to hold that in gratitude? And I know, like, it's really shifted my own way of praying. So, you know, I feel like the way I was conditioned to learn to pray, and my conditioning even around God was very much fear-based. But it was really pretty much about asking for things or begging for things or, you know, kind of trying to make, well, if I do, you know, if you give me this, then I'll do that, you know, like kind of bargaining and things like that. And I remember a teacher saying to me, you know, when a shaman is climbing a mountain and stops to pray, they don't pray to get to the top of the mountain. They pray to give thanks for how far they've already come. And to me, it's like this practice of, you know, like, because we do live in a culture where most of us, anybody who's listening right now, certainly has much to be grateful for. And sometimes I know for myself, too, I can lose sight of that, you know. I mean, we really live in a very privileged part of the world. And so I find that practicing that can really shift things. I had a tremendous lesson for myself, again, on this last visit to Peru, and I mention it just because it's very much in my awareness. But we were with a community of women, and we spent the day with them, you know, in their traditional dress and working in the fields. And, you know, we did some kind of short climbing, nothing too strenuous. You know, we were in the Andes and we do some vigorous climbing, but this was relatively gentle. And the women that were kind of leading our trek to the mountains, you know, they'd be running to hold out their hands so we could step over a little creek or a little rock. And, you know, the posture with some of us was sort of like, no, that's okay, you know, I don't need any help. And they came back to our translator and said, you know, why don't these women touch each other? And what they were really meaning is that, you know, they're not
reaching out, and they saw our movement, even up the mountain, as one chain of energy, one connection. So when somebody reaches out a hand and you say, oh, no, that's okay, you're breaking that chain. And, you know, speaking a little bit to what Deborah was saying before about oneness, you know, part of what I got to see in that is like, wow, in the West, we've really grown up to value, you know, self-reliance, and I can do it myself and being independent. But to do that at the expense of then not really being able to extend that hand. So it wasn't so much like I needed the help, but it was about making the connection. And it was offensive to them. So it was what I found fascinating, and I think which can also be helpful, is sometimes, you know, just allowing yourself to see something through the eyes of someone else, something that I thought was a relatively benign action. Oh, no, that's okay. You know, I don't need help. And how it was seen through their eyes. So, and I do feel like we are in a time again, and even in our culture, where we are able to be exposed to so many different traditions and so many different teachings, and many, many things have influenced my life. Hello?
Yep, I thought we lost you there for a sec.
Yeah. You know what, I think there was a call coming in. And to be honest with you, I apologize because I don't know if I've completely lost track of your question.
It doesn't matter. You were doing really well. I love the awareness that you had of when you do, on your intention and the way they received it.
Yeah.
So your intention of saying, no, I don't want to impose on you, and they're
right.
Taking it as a rejection and a breaking of that energetic chain.
To see it through their eyes made such sense,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And but they live in a sisterhood. They really, that I don't, I mean, again, I feel like, you know, when we talk about healing of or awakening the feminine now, I feel like part of that is not just the balancing between male and female, but also the way that we relate as women with each other, you know, and just to see, you know, this, there's really no hierarchy in that way of relating. There's no one that's above and below, and it also made me really aware that our path is an individual path, you know, in terms of our own healing. We all have work that we've come in to do. But I don't feel, and I sometimes in my own, in the past, I really feel like I felt like, okay, you know, it's like you're here to achieve enlightenment. And it felt like a very individual solo kind of journey. But I feel like it is totally a journey of humanity. And it's not about one of us getting somewhere. It's about that chain where we're following the footsteps of somebody ahead of us, but we're always reaching behind us as well. So it's not like anyone is left behind. And I don't feel we are enlightened as a society until every individual is. I mean, it's not about anyone being left behind. And I'm really beginning to see things from that perspective, and whether or not, you know, I see that in this lifetime. I just, as long as that intention is held, because I truly feel that's what it is. That's what humanity is about, you know, each one of us, not leaving anyone behind. You know, that intention is held until that is met, you know, however many lifetimes, generations it may take.
Right. Which is, again, right in line with this book of the Feminine Spiritual Trailblazers, is blazing the trails for those,
yeah,
who are coming behind, and holding your hand both directions to those,
yeah,
who are in front of us and those who are behind.
Mm.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. It's imperative that we do that. And I think both of you can jump in here. Don't we as women tend to do that more easily? And that's an easy question to answer, really. I'm trying. Then it brought to mind the image of a man or men, and saying, how can we accomplish that with both men and women, between men and women, not just, you know, women going one direction and men maybe going another direction and maybe just floundering?
Well, you know, I think that it's certainly not the only factor, but one thing that heightens women's awareness of extending the hand to those coming up behind is the experience of being mothers. And even for women that don't have children of their own, it's been, you know, at least for the last few hundred, if not few thousand years, it's been considered women's role to be caretakers, to help the young, to help the elderly, to be the school teachers, to be the nurses. You know, all these roles that are familiar to women are all about helping others. Mm-hmm. And I think as men right now are becoming more active as fathers, that perhaps this increased awareness is going to very naturally be more integrated into the male psyche. And yeah, in the pelvic artwork, I definitely see the scars that boys have if they had a mother who didn't trust men. And, you know, the boy, of course, is a male, and so he starts to feel not okay about his maleness through that experience. But, you know, the ideal for mother is not just that you help your daughters, you help your sons. You love your sons and your daughters. So it's it is inclusive, and, you know, maybe we'll shift more from a focus on mothering to a focus on parenting, which is gender neutral.
Right. So it seems to me that in the past, at least in my experience of growing up, that the boys were treated almost to become dependent upon women, and women were treated to let men think that they were subservient, but to and actually to go into a subservient mode to support the men in all ways and to let the men believe that they're right and all this other stuff. So it seems to me that when you're talking about parenting, that we need to really do need to change that to a more gender neutral situation. Do you have some ideas on how that can be accomplished?
Well, the pelvic artwork is all about seeing what it is that we really need in the way of both masculine and feminine support, and really deeply feeling the wounds that we have through if we haven't received it. And, you know, most people have received some support, but certainly not the optimal level. So, yeah, really feeling how we create armoring in our bodies and our psyches when we don't get our needs met or when we're actually abused, and then rewriting those programs. Mm-hmm. And when we work in groups, you know, sometimes if we haven't gotten what we needed, let's say we needed a hug and we didn't get it, and we don't even actually have anything in us that would help us to know that that's what we need. But in working in a group, often we can get support and help from other people in the group who can offer that or suggest that or share their own experience around that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sad but true that for most people, at least in my generation, their experience with, well, I'll just talk about the family, is either they had a mother who supported them in distrusting and not respecting men, you know, a mother who'd been wounded by men, and, you know, she was kind of trying to help her daughter by warning her that, you know, they're dangerous, they're unreliable. But it's not really the support we need. We need support to trust and to be able to accept help, as we're discussing about going up the mountain. And we need to be able to trust both men and women to give us support and extend a helping hand.
the other situation a lot of people experienced in the family was competition with mother for the attention of father.
Mm-hmm.
If he's either hard at work or is suffering from an addiction or post-traumatic stress from the war or whatever, and he's not very available, what often happens is mother and daughter end up competing for what little affection is available. And, of course, it's not any better for boys. Often there's either competition with dad about who's a better man, and the father can kind of prop up his ego by competing with the little boy, and, of course, he's going to win against the little boy. Or there's a father who is afraid of women's anger or is feels unable to meet the woman's needs and who tends to withdraw and, again, kind of, you know, on some level supports the boy, but really the boy ends up trying to fill the father's shoes because the father's not doing it, and that's not supportive either. And those four patterns are the most common ones that we see. And it's actually not just my generation. I wish I could say it changed in the next generation, but I have people in their 20s and 30s going through these groups, and I've done these groups all over the world, and it's fairly universal. So at some point, we've got to break the chain. We've got to say, okay, enough. I'm going to reprogram this on the inside so that the way I show up in the world is supportive of my sisters and is supportive of my brothers and my children.
Well, you know, this brings up a question for me. Is years ago when I was ending a relationship, I said I refuse to get into another relationship until I have a good relationship with myself. So I basically made a conscious choice. I'm not quite sure how this works, but it seemed to have worked. Turn off all sexual energy coming out of me so that I became kind of androgynous, if you will, because I needed to have that time to not be bothered by anybody else in order to get into good relationship with myself. That was just for me. So then there came a time when I say, okay, I'm done. I'm ready with this. I'm ready to get into a relationship, but don't know how to turn that energy back on. So when you get somebody like that, how do you help them? How can somebody who has basically turned themselves into androgyny and so that they can come back into being either masculine or feminine?
Well, it's so interesting that you're asking that because that was actually my process as well. I kind of got to a point more than once of saying, yeah, I've got to get it right on the inside. That's a lot easier than struggling with somebody on the outside. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, in our culture, we sort of think of sexuality as always involving another person or even another person of the opposite sex. That's sort of our culture's definition of what sexuality is about. And in the work that I do, it's really not seen that way. It's seen that our sexual energy, first of all, comes from the earth. It comes from nature, comes from the elements. And so I can cultivate my own sexual energy, particularly in connection with nature. And that doesn't have to include another person. Now, mostly we don't do this because I think we don't understand the importance of it. And it's generally harder if you've distanced yourself from your sexual energy to find it again than if you've been cultivating it on your own all along. But what I find is the easiest way to do that
is put yourself in situations where there's a lot of sexual energy. And that would be perhaps attending a workshop that's addressing either cultivating your own energy or that's oriented towards sexual healing. And a lot of the healing for men and women is actually to dissolve the armor, because we have this energy. It's not like it goes anywhere, but we learn to defend ourselves against the longing that has been kind of put on hold.
Okay. Well, Karen, ahead, Deborah. Go ahead.
No, I was done.
Oh, okay. Karen, were you jumping in there and I interrupted you?
You know, I just find also from a just kind of a fundamental, you know, perspective, working with the breath is very powerful, because very often we've learned to use our breath to not feel things. So, and we're doing this unconsciously, because essentially we are looking to avoid pain. And we know if we breathe too deep, you know, we're going to really feel something more. It's going to enhance the feeling. So that's why I just love the wisdom and the intelligence of the body. You know, it's simply responding to whatever information we're giving it. So it's like on some level we say, oh, okay, I don't want to feel this. The body just figures out, all right, well, if I don't really breathe there, you know, that'll solve that problem.
Okay.
And you know, really allowing the breath to fully reach into our pelvis and fully begin to draw that energy up from the earth. I remember once coming down a mountain in the Andes and running. I mean, I've run for a long time, but I couldn't not run, because there was an energy that was just surging through my body. And what I felt in that energetic surge from the earth into me was an awareness of how stallions move across the earth. They are simply feeding off that energy. And I believe, as Deborah mentioned too, you know, that energy that's coming up from the earth in and feeding our bodies is not, it's feeding us on so many levels. But we realize, right, that's how fertile that is, how creative that is, how sexual, how sensual, literally how erotic that energy is. So I feel like with our intention and with our breath, by literally rewiring ourselves, if you will, back and plugging into the earth, can be one way. And then there's, you know, lots of, I know Deborah can, you know, go on about, I'm sure, many practices that then allows that energy to rise up into the spine, and then actually using that energy to birth creation, and not just a creation of, you know, babies, as we were saying before, but anything that we're looking to create, to me, sources from that place of our sacred womb, in a sense, which holds our, you know, sexual energy.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the cultures in the Andes that you've been visiting as far as their relationships between men and women. Are there, are they peaceful? Are there tensions?
Well,
they figured it out?
You know, I feel like they do look at things, you know, a lot from an energetic perspective, you know, obviously the masculine and feminine within each of us, and how our work is about bringing those into balance. I know, you know, for myself, I certainly held in value more of the masculine essence and more of those traits in my upbringing, because I feel like not only in the family, but in our culture, that's what was valued. And that's a, you know, that's a good thing, but it was done at the expense of the feminine. So there really was no value given to, the feeling receptive part of my nature. You know, that part of being doing is really what was held in value. But what I noticed, I don't want to feel like, oh, I'm a spokesperson for the Andes, but from what I've seen, you know, they really do have roles. And so that there is a sense, like, for instance, in this community that we were in, women are, as you say, you know, the nurturers, the caretakers, they're the weavers. Actually, they do a lot, but the men may be the ones that are out there more with the mules and digging the fields. And the roles, though, however, the difference is, and it's really a learning for me, is not their identity. Like, we tend to identify ourselves. Like, a role is something that you kind of step into, but it's not who you are, because they really do see themselves as the sons and the daughters of the earth. And that's a much different way to look at yourself than, you know, literally just being, that this is my job and that's my identity. And I think in some ways men have a tendency to do that. Like, I've seen men that are retired much later in life, and it's almost as if they lose a purpose because their whole identity is wrapped up in mm-hmm. their job or what they do. So I think the distinction, and it might sound more like semantics, but differentiating between your, you know, what your role is and what your identity is. You know, you're a daughter of the earth, but your role is, you know, a mother to your child or a sister in your community. And you know what else they do is they also find the gifts of each woman, so that maybe somebody is better, and a lot of times these things are really recognized early on. So you're sort of developed with whatever your innate gifts may be. So maybe there is somebody that does better with weaving or somebody that is better in preparing food. But I've seen some communities, it just seems to be a little bit more communal with roles that are defined between men and women, and we may look at that and think, oh, we're stepping back, like, in time, because we've tried a lot to get away from that. And, you know, I think Deborah mentioned in her opening comments about the feminine revolution that happened, and I think that was more about actually us trying to become more men, you know, more like men, rather than actually claiming who we are as women and valuing that essence, you know, that deep creative essence, that deep nurturing essence, the being that receptive vessel. And so I don't know that they've kind of sort of got it all together, but like I said, they are a little bit more defined in their roles. Like, they know, you know, but they're not identified with it, if that makes any sense.
It certainly does.
Makes sense to me, yeah.
So go ahead.
No, so they just seem to be able to live more from a very heart-centered way, and it boils down to relationship, and that means relationship with everything, you know, relationship with how they are with the earth, relationship with how they are with the mountains, you know. There's a reverence that is brought to everything, and that just then contributes to the relationship I feel like that they have with each other, you know, in community, in relationship with their partners. So I feel like, and ultimately that starts with the relationship, as you mentioned earlier, too, with ourselves, you know, and really are we okay in relationship with ourselves? Because it's from that place that we step into relationship with others.
Right. You know, some of this goes back to this being in relationship with yourself, but that kind of androgynous type of energy that comes across, and I wonder if this happens to other people, is I found that when I, as being a person in relationship with myself, that I do not tend to treat men and women differently. I tend to treat them very much as people. You are someone that I am talking with whom I'm speaking at this moment, or you are someone with whom I am teaching at this moment, but there's no difference. Just because you wear a different body doesn't mean that you are different in relation with me. And sometimes that is a bit of a, women seem to love it because they tend to recognize that. Sometimes men have a little issue with it and think that I'm a lesbian because I don't come on to them.
Mm-hmm.
So so there's that, you know, it's not necessarily androgyny as much as it is in today's life, in any case, being so comfortable within myself that I don't need to impress somebody else.
Right.
And I find mostly men having an issue with that. And I wish it wasn't so.
Right. Well, I think in a situation like that, you know, to me, it feels like a reflection of where that male may be in his own evolution and kind of needing. And again, I feel most of these things are beyond our awareness because they're so deeply ingrained in our patterns, you know, that, you know, that there's some part of him that actually needs to be seen as a sexual being to feel like he has some worth, you know. So I feel like more and more, you know, not sort of taking those things personally, and it's taken me a long time to, and I can't say that I'm there, but to really not interpret, you know, the discomfort or the rejection or whatever it is that might be coming from somebody else is something that I'm doing, you know.
Right.
And it sounds like I said, just in those cases, it may be something more like that, you know,
I think
come to that awareness in himself.
I think you may be right, but, and I'll get Deborah in here, doesn't everybody want to somehow have that sense of being sexually recognized or recognized on an erotic or sexual level? I don't know.
I think this is really core to our feelings of not only self-esteem, but for a lot of people, our sexuality is actually the easiest access or the most immediate access to the divine, to something bigger than our personal egos. So I think it's both important in terms of our self-image, but also in a much more concrete way.
Okay.
But, you know, I feel the way that we kind of use our sexual energy in terms of relating to, you know, someone who may be more of a colleague as compared to a partner that we're intimate with are two different things, you know. And I do feel as a culture, you know, we don't quite have that together yet, you know, especially because, you know, we get so many messages about what sexuality is, about what beauty is, and they're not so we end up internalizing, obviously, these messages. I remember, and again, this was one time on at Umantai years ago in the Andes. I remember my experience with the altitude made me really puffy, and I was feeling very, very ugly. And, you know, we're sitting in a circle at some point and sharing, and everybody's feeling really, you know, grateful and surrounded by beauty and all. And I just, like, wanted to, you know, kind of dig a hole and bury myself. I, like, just did not want to be seen. But then, of course, when you're in these circles, how can you not, you know, I feel like how could I show up and not be authentic? And really to, you know, just sort of speak where I was feeling so ugly in the midst of all this beauty around me, but there was no place in me where I could access beauty because I had identified with what I call all these false prophets of beauty. And where does that come from, you know? I mean, I feel like it permeates into our consciousness from the culture in many ways that we're raised. You know, we're constantly getting those messages, and they get in at very, very young ages, and they're getting in, you know, earlier and earlier, I feel like this also then, you know, contributes to the, you know, the eating disorders, you know, the discomfort in our own bodies with our own sexual energy because of this distorted orientation to what is it to be sexual, what is it to be beautiful. You know, where does that actually come from? And I do feel like sometimes, yeah, we have to do these sort of overt kinds of things, thinking that's going to get it, you know, like, oh, if I act a certain way, or, you know, those, you know, that's going to make me sexual. But I feel like, you know, for us as women to really be confident as who we are, right, and be able that, you know, like, to me, that's really sexy. You know, I don't know that yeah. men are necessary, you know, but I and if certain men are threatened by that, you know, then I feel like that's where their work is, you know, in terms of their own sexuality. So I feel like we really are in times that are shifting, you know, and we you know, what are the footsteps that we have? You know, I think in many ways, like, we know where we don't want to go. But I feel like my relationships have changed. The partners that have come into my life and that I'm choosing have changed relative to what's happening within me, you know. Because as I mentioned about dimming my own light and diminishing myself, that was a real pattern in an intimate relationship, and that took a long time to shift. And I'm not saying that there's no remnants of it, but you reach a point where you become really aware, and then you can make a shift rather than get stuck in a pattern or blind to a pattern, you know, for your, you know.
And have to do it over and over again.
Yeah. We know that, right?
Right. So tell us some more about the messages from the Andes. Tell us a little bit more about what kind of messages you're getting and sharing. And didn't I see something about you were writing a book? You have written a book, or you're in the process of writing a book about this?
Well, I have written a book which has been in a birthing process for a long time, like an evolution. You know, it started out maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and then, you know, about 3 years ago, it was then another version. And and the first day that I had arrived in Peru, I had a coca leaf reading, and they'll use coca leaves, you know, the way you would use your cards, you know, for divination things. And this one particular shaman didn't really work with your question so much. You know, he would just throw the leaves, and he said to me, you know, did you write a book? And I thought that was pretty fascinating. How would he know that? So I said, yes. And he says, well, you have to make it bigger. And I feel like whoever it is that we are, and whatever experience we've gained and wisdom through our own individual paths, you know, one of the messages that kept coming through is none of this is our own. And I feel like you are a model of that, Jan, in the sense that, you know, trailblazing, you know, to share. So whatever someone's, you know, message that they're walking with, you know, sometimes even for me, it's more my own ego, like, oh, who am I to really share anything, which is also ego, you know, in its sort of inverted form. But it's like dropping the doubts, the fears, and really knowing that, you know, we are vessels, and that is why we're here, is to, you know, share amongst each other and in the world, and starting with our families. But I feel like there's a real draw to Peru now, and the way I see it is, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, so many of the spiritual teachings were really coming from India and the East, and there was a real hunger, and you know, yoga and practices like meditation were just kind of being introduced to us as Westerners. And I feel like now that is very much rooted. I mean, yoga and meditation is part of my daily practice. It's part of what I work with, you know, the tools that I'll use when I'm working with people. And people will always say to me, you know, am I doing yoga? You know? And so it's very much in our awareness whether somebody practices it or not, you know. And I feel like that's what's happening now in Peru. It's so many people, whether they're aware of it or not, or who knows why they want to visit or travel there. But I feel like because it is a culture that for thousands of years has lived in what they call Aini, or right relationship with the earth, with who they refer to as Pachamama, with the elements, you know, with the with the sun, with the stars, and I feel like this is where we need to move as humanity in order for our own species to survive, you know, learning how to be in right relationship with the earth. And I feel it does start with being in right relationship with our own bodies. You know, where is it that we are polluting ourselves, you know? I remember one teacher I had over the years, Alberto Violdo, who you may be aware of. I remember something that he said. There was a medicine woman of the Amazon who said, do you know why they're really cutting down the rainforests? Is because they're wet and they're dark and they're messy and they're fertile and they're tangled and they're feminine, you know? And what are we doing to that part of the earth, you know? And so, and that's really how we've held the feminine in our collective consciousness in many ways, like whatever we could do to suppress it, to hold it down. And I do feel that that ties into our sexual nature. And it really is about that part of who we are emerging and coming forth to really create and birth a new world order. And they don't actually see that necessarily happening for, you know, I mean, there was all that talk with the Mayan calendar in 2012.
Right.
In December, but from some of the things that, you know, the medicine people there, they see in the next 300 to 400 years as that shift actually happening, and that this is a time of planting seeds. So this is what something like your book is doing now, you know. And I know when I had the reading, he said, you know, you're like a farmer, and you're planting seeds now so that that harvest will be there for, you know, the next generation. And
right.
So I feel like you are completely in alignment with, you know, where we are moving in our evolution. And I feel like we all are, whether we're even aware of it or not. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just more and more allowing that mystery to be and, you know, not feel like I have to figure so many things out. But I do feel it is about, as like I said, moving more into right relationship with the earth. And that starts really with prayer. You know, even if you were to wake up each morning and offer thanks. I mean, they use cocoa leaves and they blow their prayers and they'll offer them to the earth. Certainly Native Americans will use tobacco as a vehicle for their prayers. But I feel like even if we woke up and just offered gratitude. We were given a prayer, actually, for the world, and I feel like if we started our day that way, even just in prayer, being grateful for everything that the earth provides, for the sun overhead that warms us and feeds us, gives us light, you know, that would begin to even start a shift, bringing that more into our awareness.
Well, gratitude is definitely... Gratitude is truly powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask the both of you again. Do you think that this... Do you see this feminine paradigm or the change in what's going on? Do you see that as with feminism was a movement that really led much everybody into a new way of thinking? Do you think that women are again on the forefront of this change in the world?
Well, I really find the...
This is Deborah, right?
This is Deborah, yeah.
Okay.
I find that the harmony between the masculine and feminine is... like that's our next step in evolution. And because women have tended to be more interested in relationship, yes, because of our socialization, and who knows, maybe it's our nature as well, I can't really say, but for whatever the reason, women more than men have focused on relationship as something important, whether it's relationship with the earth or with ourselves or with our same gender, other gender. So it's not so much that women inherently
you know, are the chosen ones. But for whatever reason, women have been primed to really look at this creating harmony through relationship. And so if that is indeed the next step in our evolution, and I feel that it is then in that sense, women are leading the way. But in the sense that it's about the getting away from either or againstness, which is really kind of where we started, and what's really in our path in terms of evolution is working together in harmony. This intrinsically requires that everyone, men, women, children, animals, corporations, everybody, work together. That's the only thing that I think is going to take us to the next level is really walking that talk of oneness, of really getting that it's time that we get away from the idea of a man as a leader or a woman as a leader, and realize if we're going to have an image about that, that it's both. It's not just Jesus. It's not just the great mother. It's the divine couple.
Okay. Well, now I need to ask you both if I know you both do courses and have offerings that you offer people. Oh, I asked Karen about a book, but Deborah, I didn't ask you. I know you're the author of several books. Would you like to share that with us?
Yeah. I think the one that's most relevant to the conversation we're having is The Seven Natural Laws of Love, which was my effort to draw from indigenous wisdom, all the world religions, everything that I had come across in my quest to understand love, and to reframe it, not in the way most of us have been taught, but as it actually operates in the world. And to recognize the power of gratitude, as Karen was talking about, and forgiveness and truth and recognizing. These are all really significant parts of love. I've also written a couple of books about polyamory, which is a whole other conversation I don't think we have time for now. but is again my effort to question some of the cultural assumptions of what love and relationships are supposed to look like, and see if there might actually be an ecology of love that's much more diverse than what we've been taught.
Awesome. So if somebody wants to take one of your classes or workshops, how do they get in touch with you? Do you have a website? Do you have email? Can you share that with us, Deborah?
Yeah, my website is lovewithoutlimits.com. And my email is taj@lovewithoutlimits.com. And those are both really good ways to find more about my work and to get in touch with me.
All right, great. And Karen, how about you? If somebody wanted to take one of your courses or go on a trip with you or get in touch with you, how would they do that? Do you have a website?
The website is karenschrappa.com, and there is an email on there. Or Facebook for me is also a tool, you know, that
okay.
I use that way.
Right.
So, and that would just obviously be my name, Karen Schrappa.
Okay, and your last name is spelled C-H-R-A-P-P-A.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, terrific. All right, now I'll ask each one of you, is there something that I forgot? Is there something that you'd like to say we haven't addressed in the course of this conversation? Karen, why don't you start?
Wow. I feel like I get these questions. No, I feel like we really have
you know, covered a lot of territory. And like I said before, I really, you know, honor you as a trailblazer and what you've been, you know, creating with this book, you know, having this vision and, you know, the dedication and the efforts that it takes to see it through. And I feel like, you know, for each of us, you know, it's not like a spiritual path is like where the rose petals are going to be out in front of, and we're going to like just gently kind of walk across it. I mean, very often, and, you know, I know we've all experienced times in our life where we're really walking through fire. And I don't think, you know, I mean, I don't exactly know how to define a spiritual path, but I think the best thing we can do is let go of what we think it is supposed to be or what it is supposed to look like. And, you know, beginning to sort of drop the notion as women that, you know, being nice is being spiritual. I feel like for me, the one thing that has served me, as I mentioned before, is having some daily practice and really committing to that, because like I find for myself, whether my practice is pretty much yoga, meditation, and prayer, but you know, it's sort of easy to come to something when we feel inspired to do it. Yeah, you know, kind of I feel like sitting today, or I kind of feel like stretching a little or whatever it might be. But, you know, when we actually commit to a practice and start our day that way, and even if it's something simple, like, you know, praying to the earth, because you're starting to make that connection and you're starting to rewire yourself, because we are so conditioned in many ways that have not served us and not supported us and not really allowed us to kind of bloom and blossom into our fullest potential. So we've got really, really good practice with that. We don't need practice in that. So beginning to take steps in a different direction does require some dedication and some effort in that way. And I feel like the richest part of my own practice are the days when I am most resistant, the days when that's the last thing that I want to do is like sit with myself when I'm really pissed off, you know, what is that like? And get to know myself that way, because I've got a lot of strategies to avoid that. So, you know, I guess that's a little bit of my soapbox, you know, a little bit of my mission. And I only say that because it really has served me. It creates this sanctuary for myself and a place that I can continue to replenish myself. And I find eventually, you know, the borders, you know, around your practice, like, okay, it's an hour, you know, they start to sort of blur and merge into your life. And, you know, we begin to step into that oneness where our spiritual self doesn't have to be separate from the part of us that, you know, is buying groceries or, you know, taking care of our children or making love or whatever activities we're involved in. So I just want to, you know, again, say thank you for the opportunity to be part of this project. It's very exciting to think that I'm a trailblazer.
Right. So, Deborah, did we miss anything with you? Is there something that you want to say that we just haven't gotten to yet?
Well, you know, we've covered a lot of ground.
It's been a really amazing
conversation. So I also want to thank you for creating this opportunity to talk together and to listen. And I guess the one thing that occurs to me that I'm not sure, I think it might have been mentioned in passing, but I think is really important and maybe could use a little underscore, and that is the importance of really honoring our bodies as temples and realizing that. Karen talked very beautifully about the connection with the earth. Our body, that's our like personal little bit of earth. Mm-hmm. And you know, the culture kind of teaches us to ignore the messages that our bodies are always offering. And another word for those messages we could call intuition. But really listening to what the body has to say, and not that we ignore what the mind has to say, but you know, we've been taught to put, you know, like 99% of our attention on our thoughts, our thinking, and to overlook our intuition. To the point where many people, even women, you know, women's intuition is kind of this phrase, but you know, many of us don't have an awareness of our intuition because we're so used to ignoring it. And for me, that intuition comes through listening to my body. And so I would like to just maybe end on that note of encouraging to, in the daily practice that Karen is speaking about, if you've lost touch with the messages coming from your body, to kind of open up that channel of communication again and learn to listen and hear the wisdom of the body and to trust the wisdom of the body above anything that anybody tells you.
All right. Well, I want to remind our listeners, if you want to talk to either Karen or Deborah or myself, call in at 347-205-9074. And if you have, if you're interested in an oracle card reading, this is the time when you can call in to access that as well. Deborah and Karen, I want to thank you very much for being with me. Please don't hang up because we do have a caller here. I'm just not sure what it is that they're wanting yet. Cindy's talking with them, so we'll find that out in a minute. But I'm really delighted that you were here, that you were part of this show. It's been a really interesting show, in my opinion. But that's just my opinion, of course. So, and I want to remind our listeners as well to join us. And Deborah and Karen, I hope you'll go there after the show is over too. Go to Facebook and check into the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations group. Request to join, and Cindy will get you into that group, and then you'll be able to join the conversations that go on during the week as well as during and after the show. Mm-hmm. And remember to check out True Trinity as well for our theme song. So we have Althena on the phone. I'm going to bring her into the conversation right now. Hello, Althena. Did I say your name right? This is Jan. How can I help you?
I have a question.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm wondering if the person I'm interested in right now is interested in me.
Ah, so you want an oracle card reading, is that it?
Okay. What's an oracle card reading?
Well, I have cards here that I've chosen. I've got three cards that I chose from the deck. So let's have you choose one of the cards, 1 through 3, and we'll give you a reading on your question.
3.
Okay. These are cards that are by a wonderful artist in, oh my gosh, wow, I would say the answer is a definite yes. The card is called Festival Candle, and it shows this amazingly beautiful white candle that has a flame on it and is beautifully lit up, and it's got all kinds of flowers that are tied to the candle, and every one of the flowers is in full blossom. So, my dear, your sexuality is showing, and the answer is yes. Would you like to ask a question of Deborah, who's our relationship coach?
Why is he, like, hot and cold then?
Oh. Deborah, go for it.
Okay. Well, first of all, I have to say I'm not a mind reader, even though sometimes I read people's minds. And, you know, the best way to find out what's going on with a partner or prospective partner is to ask them some questions. And, you know, to do it in a way that doesn't put them on the spot, but that makes it about you. So maybe saying something like, I'm confused. I can't really tell if you're interested in being with me or not.
Actually, I've already explained to him what I wanted from the beginning, and I asked him if he was interested. He said he is interested, but right now he's not looking for a relationship. So, yeah.
Well, there's your answer. So, you know, sometimes there's a not an alignment between what somebody says and their behavior, but if you're even asking the question, this suggests to me that something is missing for you in this relating.
I think it's just like he's hot and cold. So I'm like, what is your problem? Like, are you interested in me? He already said he was, but, you know, I'm just thinking, like, I don't know.
Well, what does interested mean? You know, I think you said he's told you that he's actually not open for a relationship right now. So you could take him at his word and move on, or you could say, okay, this is how this guy is. He runs hot and cold. He says one thing, he does another. Is this what I want to relate with? Because you're not going to change him.
He doesn't do one thing. He doesn't say one thing and does another. Like, I haven't gotten to really to the point where I've really gotten to know him. So,
well, that might be a good indication right there, Alfina. So, this card that I told you is mostly about you. It is about your presence at the moment, who you are at the moment. And you are shining a beautiful light, and you have all of these amazing flowers that are around you. So one of the things that I'm going to suggest to you is that you focus on yourself. If he has said he's interested, but he's blowing hot and cold, then the most important thing is for you to focus on yourself and not worry about him. If you keep putting yourself on hold for him, you're going to end up damping down your own light, and you're going to end up not in a relationship. Because, unfortunately, that's what too many women have done.
I'm not holding anything out for him. I was just wondering, like, is he really interested? And, like, I don't know. So.
All right. Well, it's not going to be according to this card, I would say you're in line for an absolutely amazing relationship, whether it's with the person you're talking about or not. I don't know. First of all, I want to ask you,
main question. Is he really interested, or did he just say that just to say it, you know?
Interested
in what, sweetheart? Interested in what?
Like, interested in me, as in, like, does he like me? Is he attracted to me?
It sounds
like he was
telling you he likes you, he's attracted to you, and he's not available for a relationship right now for reasons that have nothing to do with you.
Alfina?
Okay.
This is Karen. Is she? Are you there?
Yes.
You know, I have to say I sound a bit older than you. So for many, many years, I was very much interested in men that really weren't available. And I had to look at myself and say, wow, like, why is it that I would settle for this kind of situation? And I don't think that there's kind of one blanket answer around that, but there has to be within us this fundamental place that really believes we deserve to be fully embraced for who we are. And the other thing that I found running within me is this need to get someone to love me. You know, because and this loop, that as long as that was running, you know, this kind of wanting to get something from somebody and doing everything I could, and the truth is,
you have everything. I mean, that card is so beautiful. And your heart and who you are as a woman is full and beautiful, and yet there's a seeking and something outside of that through a man to get the approval or the love that we want. And I'm not saying as humans, of course we want love, but is it coming, is it being driven by a place within us that feels inadequate, that feels less than, that feels unworthy in some way? And sometimes these are very difficult journeys to take, to examine those places within ourselves, because we truly believe that if we get this person to love us, that other stuff is going to go away. And I'm just saying that from my experience, and it's been decades, you know, of relationship and learning through that way, to really come to a place where I can embrace a relationship where that person is available. And that's a very different place to be in relationship than looking for, you know, the love that we think we're going to get from somebody else. I don't know if that resonates with you, but I want you and I want every woman to really understand that they are, you know, beautiful fully in who they are. And I want for you to have a relationship where that is validated.
Mm-hmm. Especially considering the beauty of this card.
Yeah. Like,
this is amazing, Althina. This card represents you, and you just glow. Absolutely glow. And there is I don't mean this to sound anything related to your body size, but there is a voluptuousness about this card that it just can't be denied. Everybody who sees you is drawn to you, whether it's with their eyes or whether it is an attraction that comes, that draws them to you. So be aware of that. Know that, and I hope that you've gained something from both Karen and Deborah and from the card.
Okay.
And I hope you'll join
yeah.
us on. All right. Well, I hope you'll call back another time. Thank you. Okay, we have another caller on the line. I'm going to bring you in right now. We're getting down to the wire here, so I missed the call. There we go. Hi, this is Jan. Who's this? This is somebody who's listening only. I'm going to put them back on hold. All right, great. So, Karen and Deborah, once again, I want to thank you very much for being part of the show. And thank you again with your insights for Althina when she called in. We're going to bring the show... All right. We're going to bring the show to a close. I want to remind everybody that the book is coming out probably in August. It's called Feminine Spiritual Trailblazers, Contemporary Women Spiritual Leaders. And Karen and Deborah are the first on our 13-week series of interviewing these women, having them on the radio show. Remember to go to TrueTrinity.com to hear the song, I Am Who I Am, and to be able to listen to it and also to purchase it if you would like. Remember to go to our Facebook page, Facebook group, Purpose Talk Radio Conversations, and join in the conversations there. Next week, let me look. I have to tell you who we have on next week. Next week, our guests are Maureen, I don't know if I'm going to say this, Pauena O'Shaughnessy, how's that for a combined name, and Deborah Roth. So make sure that we see you next week. Call in. We'll love to talk with you, and we'll love to hear from you. And for now, for this week, I wish you soul blessings. See you next week.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.